You know, the word archon really began in the ancient Greek times of Pericles. It means leader. And so the archons always were leaders, if you will, in their respective environments, whether it was the Greek state, Athens, or now during the period of the Ecumenical Patriarchate, See of St. Andrew, and now the church in America.
Today on Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, we will learn about the work of the archons within the Orthodox Christian Church. If you're not familiar with this dedicated group of servant leaders, you're about to learn a great deal. And if you are familiar with the archons, well, there's always much more to discover. Welcome to this visit. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the new president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts. We're on the web at myocn.net and on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Here's Father Chris.
One of the greatest honors bestowed on a layman of the Orthodox Church under the Ecumenical Patriarchate is to be named an archon, or a member of the Order of St. Andrew. We've invited Dr. Anthony J. Limbarakis, National Commander of the Order of St. Andrew, to tell us more about the history, honor, and yes, the responsibility of the Order. Welcome, Doctor. Good to have you in the program.
Thank you, Father Christopher. And let me once again congratulate you on your appointment as President of Holy Cross Hellenic College. We're so proud of that, and you have big shoes to fill, but you're doing
yes.
a great job. We're all excited about your appointment.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you so much. Let's talk a minute about the Order of St. Andrew and try to unpack it for someone who may not know what that order is all about. When was the Order of St. Andrew established? Let's start with that.
Well, the Order of St. Andrew was established in the New World in the United States of America in 1966 when His Eminence of Blessed Memory, Archbishop Iakovos, established it, selecting a number of individuals that exemplified themselves in service to the Church and to the Ecumenical Patriarchate. You know, the word archon really began in the ancient Greek times of Pericles. It means leader. And so the archons always were leaders, if you will, in their respective environments, whether it was the Greek state, Athens, or now during the period of the Ecumenical Patriarchate, See of St. Andrew, and now the church in America under the leadership of Archbishop Demetrios Hieron of America.
And when did you become an archon? When was that
you know,
honor bestowed upon
you? It's hard to believe, but it's almost 30 years ago
oh, my goodness.
That I was blessed with this great, great honor. It was very humbling. But, you know, as a PK, a priest kid, I'm glad you mentioned my middle initial J after my father of blessed memory, John, a Greek Orthodox priest for over 60 years. Having been raised in the church, the Ecumenical Patriarchate was always a central theme in our family. And going to the Ecumenical Patriarchate as a child, meeting the Ecumenical Patriarch Athenagoras, and I remember him towering over me and how impressive that face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, if you will, interaction was just as a child. And then later we went back again and a number of times. So the church and the Ecumenical Patriarchate were always very important to us as growing up in the Limbarakis family. And so now, with the initial involvement in 1987, when I was had the blessing to be invested as an archon, and being involved in the National Council since 88, no other organization in the world is focused singularly on the well-being in defense of the Holy and Great Mother Church of Constantinople. And I really feel it's a ministry of each and every archon to serve in that capacity, focused on that, because, as you know, the Phanar, the world spiritual center of Orthodoxy, is under extensive pressure by the hostile government of Turkey, as it has been since the modern day establishment of the Republic of Turkey in 1922, and of course during the Ottoman Empire when it suffered so much. So thank God that our focus is unique. It's focused as like a laser beam on that one issue. And we work very hard on those issues of utilizing our time, talent, and treasure, whether it's a political initiative or a governmental initiative in Washington or the State Department or the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or whether we are in Ankara meeting with various ministers, or at the European Union or the European Court of Human Rights. We have this focus that is singularly on the physical well-being of the Ecumenical Patriarchate, our spiritual father, His All Holiness, Bartholomew.
And you've been the national commander since 1998, correct?
It has been, yes. It's been
wow,
that long.
That's incredible.
It's been a great, great blessing and a great privilege, and I consider it an awesome, awesome responsibility that really I give my heart and soul to every single day.
Like, I can attest to your dedication. There's no doubt about it, having traveled with you and with the Archon several times across the pond, so to say, to deal with the religious persecution. I want to talk specifically about what is an Archon and also the five major initiatives that you have. I'd really like to give you that opportunity to talk about those five, because that gives our listeners a very good pie in the sky look down upon what you're doing, and they might be able to actually dip in there and help out too.
Oh, that would be great. Well, again, an archon is someone who's been recognized for his service to the church, but it's not just the local church, the parish of the local parish of the archon candidate. It's We actually have a grading system when we analyze prospective candidates for the officion or office of archon. They're recommended, and we give points for local service to the parish, metropolis service to the level of the metropolis, the archdiocese service, is this individual involved in the archdiocese at large? And of course, and most importantly, his service to the Ecumenical Patriarchate. Has he done something that singles him out? So it's a system in which a committee reviews all the candidates, and we award points at the various levels of activity. And then those who make the cut at that level are then presented to His Eminence Archbishop Demetrius of America, our Exarch, and then he further analyzes, and then once it goes through this process, then they're presented, and if those who pass these levels of scrutiny are then presented to the Ecumenical Patriarch, who personally selects an officion or office that fits this particular person, typically by his background, his profession, his interests. Traditionally, physicians, I am a radiologist, practicing radiologist in Philadelphia. Traditionally, the doctors will receive the officion of actuarios, and businessmen many times receive the officion of deputatos. But I have to tell you that since we're this year recognizing the 50th anniversary of archons in the New World in the United States, we are publishing a book under the guidance of our historian, Archon George Dimakopoulos of Fordham University, on the various officia of the Order of St. Andrew.
The various
titles.
Various
titles, and it will be a scholarly book, and it will be published in the fall during our Archon weekend and released.
And I'm happy to share with our listeners that Holy Cross Press here at the College School of Theology and Seminary will be the publishing company of that book. So we are very pleased
indeed
to be working side by side with the Archons. That's great.
Yes. We have that process where Archons are selected. They're given an officia, and then they get into the issue of religious freedom. And, you know, it took us years, really, to develop an understanding of the religious freedom deficit and crisis that exists in Turkey. We even sent an Archon attorney, George Rakis, to Constantinople, Istanbul, where he spent over a week in the archives to delineate the number of confiscated properties and other highly sensitive matters that demonstrated in a material way the religious freedom crisis and violations perpetrated by Turkey against the Mother Church. And we were able to, and with the guidance, of course, with attorneys, et cetera, we have classified these violations and concerns into five major areas. Perhaps the first major area is the Turkish government does not recognize the Ecumenical Patriarchate as a legal entity. In the eyes of the government, the Ecumenical Patriarchate does not exist, has no legal personality. So when you don't have a legal personality, when you don't have a corporate existence in the government, you can't buy property, you can't sell property, or properties that you did hold prior to the establishment of the government can easily be confiscated. And that has happened, and we were able to delineate that thousands, over 10,000 properties of the church and the Greek Orthodox community have been confiscated since the establishment of the modern-day Republic of Turkey. Now, I have to say that 3 years ago, in 2014, Prime Minister at that time, Erdogan, wanted to return some of these properties. But I have to say this was a disingenuous gesture, which he did actually at a dinner breaking the Ramadan fast, in which he met with His All Holiness and other religious leaders and say, we're going to return properties that have been confiscated. But you know, in the past, first of all, the properties have been returned at a minuscule rate, number one. And number two, there are now efforts underway by the government to try to reconfiscate those properties that have already been returned. So this is the type of duplicitous activity that we have been dealing with really for a long time with the government of Turkey. Another issue, of course, is the interference by the government of Turkey to elect an ecumenical patriarch. They say that the ecumenical patriarch must be a Turkish citizen. We say that anyone who is canonically eligible to be ecumenical patriarch should be available to be voted on. They say if you don't follow our rules, we will appoint our own ecumenical patriarch, and if I say ecumenical with tongue-in-cheek because they don't even use the word ecumenical. They don't recognize that. So that's still an issue. They have made some gestures that some people feel might be a step in the right direction in that they are granting citizenship to hierarchs who would like to obtain Turkish citizenship. But, you know, it was an arbitrary thing, and it could be just as arbitrarily removed. So that's another disingenuous.
Let's stop there for a moment. I want our listeners to fully understand what you have said, the magnitude of that. So we are saying that the ecumenical patriarch who leads 300 million Orthodox Christian worldwide, he is the first amongst equals. We know that. He's not like the Pope of Rome. But I can just imagine what would happen if the Italian government had to approve, and maybe they do, I don't know if that's a fact, but if they had to approve the election of the leadership of the Catholic Church, I mean, it's ludicrous when you think about it.
Another analogy would be that the government requires that the Pope be Italian or an Italian
right.
citizen.
Right.
We wouldn't have John
that's
Paul,
a culture analogy,
we wouldn't
yes.
have Benedict, we wouldn't have Francis.
It's very, it's amazing. Well, that was two. Let's go on. You covered the third one a little bit, the confiscation
property
of property. Right?
Another thing, of course, is the closure of Halki. Halki is the school of theology located on a beautiful island off the coast of Istanbul, Constantinople. On top of the island, there's a beautiful hill that has a magnificent view of the Sea of Marmara. And on that hill is the Holy Trinity Monastery. Now, if we stop for a moment, the Holy Trinity Monastery was established by Photius the great patriarch of ecumenical patriarch, the saint, and the one who Christianized the Slavic nations by sending Cyril and Methodius. So it's this Photius who established the Holy Trinity Monastery. Now, on the grounds of the Holy Trinity Monastery is the theological school of Chalki. And some of the major luminary theologians of the church graduated Chalki. So in 1971, what did the Turkish government do? They shut down Chalki. They prohibited any teaching of potential seminarians and theologians. The library itself is a treasure chest of manuscripts that go back centuries and centuries and centuries. So over the decades, there has been intermittent talk about reopening Chalki. But quite frankly, it's really iconic of the general religious freedom crisis that exists in Turkey. You can't even, it's like burning books. You're not allowed to learn the faith so that you could teach the faith, so that you could lead the faith. That's what they're trying to do, and that's what they have done.
It's a slow strangulation of the faith. That's what they're trying to do.
You're listening to an interview with Dr. Anthony Limbarakis, an archon of the Orthodox Christian Church and National Commander of the Order of St. Andrew, and we'll get back to that in just a moment. This is Come Receive the Light on the Orthodox Christian Network, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. In just a minute, you will hear about the role of the Order of St. Andrew in the upcoming Holy Council in Crete. We have a lot more information about that Holy Council gathering on our website at myocn.net. You'll also hear a couple of references to an interview on 60 Minutes, the news program, back in August of 2010 with reporter Bob Simon and Patriarch Bartholomew. We have a link to that full television interview on our website. The site is myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Here again is Father Chris.
Well, we're coming close to the end of our time, so I want to ask you two more questions.
Sure.
Compound, you mentioned it, but let's go a little bit deeper. The Ecumenical Patriarchate in Constantinople holds an amazing treasure of manuscripts, relics, sacred items from our rich history. But there is a great bit of tension in Turkey, as we all know. Some might think we should move to a safer location. And I know that question is sort of, people don't want to talk about it. They do want to talk about it. It sort of sends shivers up people's spines. But what do you think would happen if the strains in international politics forced the Ecumenical Patriarch to leave for the sake of his life?
Well, you know, His All Holiness has said that he feels persecuted. In that famous 60 Minutes interview by Bob Simon, there is a concept of sacred ground, and that's what we're talking about, sacred ground from St. Andrew, the first apostle of Jesus Christ, to his 269th successor, Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew. So there's really no choice in abandoning sacred ground that was established by the first apostle of Christ in the name of Jesus Christ. So that's really not on our radar, and that we can't envision that ever happening. His All Holiness is a Turkish citizen. He was born and raised in Imbros, one of the islands. He served in the military. He's done his duty to his state, and yet he's treated as a second-class citizen. So I can't envision that happening ever. And thank God we have the leadership of the Ecumenical Patriarch in the person of Bartholomew, who has stood up courageously in a very difficult and hostile environment and told the government, don't treat Orthodox Christians as second-class citizens. Turkey is 98-point-something% Sunni Muslim, and if you're not Sunni Muslim, you virtually have no religious freedom rights, including the Catholics, the Protestants, the Jews. Even Alevi Muslims don't enjoy the freedom that the Sunni Muslims do. But they will not obliterate the ecumenical patriarchate. That's not going to happen. And there will be continued staunch defense led by His All Holiness to remain at the See of St. Andrew.
I remember that interview. It really was a famous interview, and you alluded to it. And he said, Simon said to His All Holiness, "Do you feel crucified?" And he said, "Yes, I do feel crucified here in this city." But he remained very, very strong. The camera zoomed in upon him. He said, "I'm a Turkish citizen. This is my country. I serve this country. Why would I leave this country?" Now the question is, he wants to stay. We want him to stay. It is our place. It is the beginning of our faith there. And the question is, will the politics of the world allow it? And then if anything goes wrong, will we have the strength and the fortitude to back him up? And I believe we do. I know the Archons have his back and will be there to protect. One more question
for
you.
We just met with the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, last week on this subject. Mm-hmm. And they're leading Archons, John Katsimatidis, Michael Psottos, Bill Dukas, Peter Pappas, Dennis Neal. We all met with the Speaker of the House of the United States and brought these poignant issues on religious persecution of the ecumenical patriarchate, and in addition to the Orthodox Christians of the Middle East. When we talk about the Orthodox Christians of the Middle East, or when we talk about Christians of the Middle East, 60% of the Christians of the Middle East are Greek Orthodox. So when there are beheadings, when there are persecutions, tortures, and all of this against Christians, the preponderance of that befalls on our Orthodox brothers and sisters. It's just a horrendous situation.
Well, you and the Archons, really, Anthony, you're all to be commended. I see you working night and day. I've witnessed it with my own eyes. I've sat next to you at many of these religious freedom conferences that you and the Archons have put together. And I'm in awe of what you've done. I have one more question for you. We all know that there's a Holy and Great Council happening in June in Crete. An event like this hasn't happened in at least 1,200 years. What role do the Archons have, let's say, in logistics or the success of an event of this magnitude?
Well, again, it's a ministry, and it's a great privilege to serve the needs of the Mother Church. You know, the Archons did underwrite the Synaxis meeting in January of all the autocephalous churches in Geneva that set the groundwork and ground rules, if you will, for this holy and great council. The Order of St. Andrew has helped raise over $1.5 million to underwrite the various components of the Holy and Great Council. And the final dinner, hosted by His All Holiness, the Ecumenical Patriarch, and in honor of the autocephalous churches and hierarchs, but with special distinction of the 25th anniversary of the Ecumenical Patriarch as the spiritual father of the 300 million Orthodox Christians, the Order of St. Andrew has underwritten that final farewell banquet as well. So we've done our part in terms of time, talent, and treasure to serve the Mother Church, and specifically in this role in assisting the needs of organizing and the logistics and the technological infrastructure for this historic meeting, the last of which was in 787, as you alluded to. The second ecumenical council that took place in Nicaea was the last such one.
Well, there's a lot going to be happening this summer in Crete. Our listeners should also be aware that aside from everything that the Archons are doing, there is this team that's been put together, many of them from the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America. And we've sent over about 20 of our students from Hellenic College Holy Cross to assist the Archons and the team to put this together. One final question. How can our listeners learn more about the Order of St. Andrew?
Well, we do have a website, that is chock full of information. Mm-hmm. We have a newsletter. The website is archons.org, archons.org. There are many links on that website. There's news, there's newsletters. We have an outstanding annual report that is published by the Order of St. Andrew. We have a copy, a PDF copy, of all the past annual reports. So it's a treasure trove of information on the work of the Order, and more importantly, on the issues that affect the well-being of the Ecumenical Patriarchate.
I want to thank you very much for being here. You have our prayers, especially on those five major initiatives: the ecumenical status of the Patriarchate, the government's involvement in choosing a patriarch, the confiscation of properties that belong to Greek Orthodox Christians, the reopening of Halki, and five, of course, the legal identity of the Ecumenical Patriarchate. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Father Chris. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us on this another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts. That website for the Archons, again, is very, very simple, obviously. Archons, with an S, A-R-C-H-O-N-S, .org. And don't forget that we have a link to that video of Bob Simon talking with Patriarch Bartholomew on the news program 60 Minutes back in August 2010. If you haven't seen that, you'll want to see it. If you have seen it, you'll want to see it again. Our website once more, myocn.net. That's myocn.net. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. This is a weekly visit from the Orthodox Christian Network. There is a whole lot more on our website. Check us out if you're not already there. We're a nonprofit outreach. Consider how you might get involved. Financially, we have a number of suggestions. Just click on the donate button on the homepage. That's myocn.net. Join us next week if you can. Tell your friends about the broadcast, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.